spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to an Okay Hyundai, I See You edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Yep, I know, it was Vanderbilt, but it was also the Tide's best performance of the season, and I would say right on time. Now, I didn't call it perfect, but if Alabama can build on this, well, folks, now we're talking. Let's start offense just like we do, and we're going to talk about Bryce just like we do, and it feels like today we maybe have a little bit more to say. Mr. Young was 25 of 36, just barely shy of 70% passing. There were no interceptions today. He had a couple last week, and he threw for 385, so it was the first game of the season where he really put up a big number. He did have four touchdowns. Now, he's thrown for five touchdowns on the season, four still a big number. But when he threw for five, he was just in the 200 yards. Good day, not a great day. 385 with four touches, certainly a big day. The Tide offense on as a whole put up 628 yards. And so Bryce was a significant contributor to the total offensive production. 12 pass catchers on the day. Bryce didn't connect with all of those, as we brought in other quarterbacks, but 12 pass catchers on the day, which is really, really nice. And there were eight pass catchers that had multiple, so at least two, some with more. So that was nice to see the ball distribution there. You know, Coach made a point in his post-game presser talking about RPOs, and sometimes we don't know, and you sort of paraphrasing Coach a little bit, sometimes we don't know where the ball is going to go when it's snapped. And it's up to the quarterback to read that. And we put a lot on Bryce's shoulder in that regard. That's my editorial, but it's true. And so Coach makes the point of sometimes, you know, it's a run past option. That's what the RPO is. And we don't know until we see the alignment and the decision that the quarterback actually makes. Are we going to run this play or are we going to pass? And that can lead to a significant, you know, depending upon what the defense does. We saw a lot more passing activity. And then Coach also made the point that play to play, even if we know it's a passing play, we don't always know where the ball is going to go. And again, that's a lot of reading at the line of scrimmage based on what the defense does and then how the receivers break open. So you can't just say run that pass route for a particular receiver. I'm convinced that that does still happen. That can still happen. And we see scheming different offensive coordinators to make that happen. We're going to put the ball in a certain receiver's hands X amount of time. So I still think some of that does still happen. But I like the organicness of, you know, running an RPO and letting the ball go where the defense will allow it to go and having success in that regard. And so I think we certainly saw that on Saturday. The passing game really opened up, and as Tide fans, that's something that we've been looking for. Now, you're going to have it's a knee-jerk across the fan base, and so you're going to have a lot of people barking about, well, we didn't run the ball enough. And to that, I'm going to say, you know what, we can't even have an intelligent conversation. If we're going to get mad one week because we didn't think the passing game was effective, and then we're going to get mad the next week when the passing game sort of is off the chain, and now we're going to be mad at the running game. Those are fans. It's difficult to have an intelligent conversation with that, though I'm willing to try. I was very pleased personally to see the passing game really, really open up. And there's a complementariness to it. When the passing game opens up, then that's going to open up running lanes. And when the deep passing opens up, that's going to allow shallow crosses. And we saw some of that. And I think there was sort of success across the board. Ja'Cory Brooks, who I will note, we gave the mini game ball to last week. He had a pair of catches last week and really looked like, you know, he might sort of be stepping into a role. And I would say he certainly had his biggest day or one of his biggest days. It's going to be tough to beat that Auburn game, that catch that he had. But he certainly had, production-wise, one of his biggest days in Crimson. He had 6 catches for 117. It's the first time the Tide has had a receiver go for over 100. And he had 2 touchdowns with a long of 34. So Ja'Cory Brooks really sort of emerged on the scene, and look forward to more big things from him. I would say, again, I'll defer to Coach on the RPOs and not knowing where the receivers were going, but there were a couple of receivers where it did seem that there was some intentionality in getting the ball to them, or at least having them on the field. And let's go with the open receiver. Ja'Cory Brooks certainly won. Jermaine Burton, he had a long of 48, but he had 4 for 94. So we were intentionally getting him the ball. And Trayshon Holden had 3 catches for 45. He also had a touchdown. So a couple of receivers really putting up some big days, which was really nice to see. I thought Jace McClellan had a phenomenal day at the running back position. He was the starting running back, I would say. Both Gibbs and McClellan were in to start the game, so technically they were both starters. But Jace saw a lot of the ball early. I think he had 7 or 8 touches before Gibbs had his first. And Gibbs was spending a lot of that time lined up out wide or in motion. So that was nice to see. Jace himself had a pretty balanced day. He had 11 carries for 78 yards and a touchdown. So he averaged just over 7, and he had 2 receptions for 19. So that was something to see. If there's a hole in Jace's game on Saturday, it was his shoes. He needs to spat those up or tie them tight. He blew a shoe on 3 different occasions, which was interesting. But all the same, Jace had a really good day, really demonstrated his skill set. Jahmyr Gibbs continues to just be dynamic, electric, all the positive things you would want to say. And he demonstrated that on really a limited number of touches. And we've talked about Gibbs being on a pitch count, but this, in my mind, even less of fewer touches. He had 6 total. He had 3 rushing, 21 yards, so he averaged 7, and he had 3 touches in the passing game for 43 yards, so he averaged about just a shade over 14, and he had a touchdown. And there's a play I want to call out for Gibbs, and it's almost like a bad football movie type of play, not on his touchdown reception, but in the play before the touchdown reception. So he had 2 plays in a row where he caught passes. And like I said, the second one went for his touchdown. The play before the touchdown, he ran a little play, and it looked like I said, sort of a bad football movie where they were trying to script, you know, people missing tackles. And over the course of that play, counting the 3 Vanderbilt defenders that it took to actually get Jace to the ground, there were 7 of the 11, 7 Vanderbilt defenders that ended up on the ground. There were 2 that were just Keystone Cops at the beginning of the play. One defender dove at Gibbs and missed. One had sort of overrun the play, and as he was sort of reaching back, he slid and fell. There was a defender that got a hold of Gibbs, had him by the ankles, and Gibbs was able to run out of it. And then there were 3 more guys that all converged to finally make the tackle, and all 4 of them, Gibbs included, ended up on the ground. So 7 defenders on the ground as they were trying to tackle Gibbs. Again, that was fun to watch. I'd encourage you to go back and look at film on that. This is a little bit of comedy in watching that. And then on offense, I really want to call out Jamarian Miller. He's a guy we talked about last week too that had a good day late in the game against La Moreau. And he's a guy that I've sort of challenged as a fan base. Let's watch how the coaches use him. And I would challenge the coaches on this to the extent that they would listen. But Miller's the kind of guy that is in just a world of talent. But he's so far down on the depth chart that can be frustrating to players. And Coach talks about this. You got to earn your spots. You got to earn your reps. You got to earn your opportunities. And Jamarian is doing that. There's just so many talented guys ahead of him that it does truly create sort of an authentic logjam. Not that he has a bad attitude or anything, but it's such an authentic logjam. You figure, how do I get an opportunity? I may not get an opportunity. And then it's also the kind of, you get that far 5 or 6 deep in the in the pecking order, even fans start to overlook those players. And we look at the shiny objects that come on next year's sort of recruiting class, because there's a newness to that. And I understand all of this, and I understand it. That's why I'm sort of calling it out and challenging us as fans to remember Jamarion Miller, because he is such a talent, and he is someone that we want to persist on the team, because he's got a lot of talent and can only serve the Tide in the future. Well, Jamarion said, "Oh, that's nice, and we appreciate it, but I'm going to demonstrate my capability and my contribution this season. In fact, I'm going to do it on Saturday." And what's impressive, you know, 9 carries, 63 yards. That's certainly impressive. He had 2 touchdowns, and he had 2 touchdowns. He averaged 7 yards a carry and had a long of 40. And all of that is spectacular. It truly is. It put him in stat-wise at the top or near the top of the Alabama running backs. But what was impressive, and again, you can say it's Vanderbilt and you can say it's late in the game, but you can also not argue the fact that it was late in the game. We're handing the ball off to the freshman. Everyone knows where the ball is going. Just key on Miller and you'll make the play. And even with all of those knowns, Jamarion was still just a beast to bring down, and long speed when he hit the corner. So hats off to Jamarion Miller, future star at the running back position, no doubt. We can't escape offense without talking about the offensive line, and you could argue that we're burying the lead here. And you can't talk offensive line without talking about Tyler Booker. He has really just put his name in the forefront of Alabama fans, especially those that are watching closely and watching the line play and the participants. He played multiple series at both, talking Tyler Booker here, true freshman, 5-star. He's from Connecticut originally, but was down in Florida at the IMG Academy, and was a roommate with, teammate with J.C. Latham, who is Alabama's right tackle. Well, Booker spent multiple reps or multiple series, I think he's 7 series with Alabama on Saturday, 6 of those with 5 or 6 of those series with mixed in with the starters. He spent multiple series at both guard positions, so both the left coming in for Cohen, and then at the right, Cohen coming back in, and Emil Ekior sliding out. And I don't know what I'm rooting for here other than just the best guy to play. And I think Booker's one of the best guys. He's certainly going to prove that. Saban in his presser said that Booker is, and again, sort of paraphrasing, that Booker is creating competition at multiple positions across the offensive line. And that's exactly what you want. You want to turn up the heat. Not that we're mad at anyone, but how do we get the best out of everyone? And competition certainly does that. I think we have legit SEC caliber, maybe not first team, but second or third team. I think we have SEC, all SEC caliber. I think we have 3 all SEC caliber guards playing for 2 positions. And it may be interesting to see how that plays out if we continue with a rotation, or if we don't settle on 2. I believe if we do settle on 2, it'll be Booker. And so I'm betting Booker's one of the 2, or we continue to play 3, because you don't sit Booker the way he's playing. He reminds me of, and this is borderline sacrilege, but I see it. I see it with my own eyes. He reminds me of a Landon Dickerson, who's just legendary in his play. Booker plays with a tenacity, and he seeks out violence multiple times, not just this week, but looking back at his play last week against La Moreau. And again, you can talk about the opponents, but you also talk about a willingness to just engage when it might not even be necessary. Landon Dickerson was known for, I'm blocking, I'm covering my space, no one's coming, I'm going to go help someone, and I'm not just going to go help and put my hands on a guy and just do it for theatrical purposes. I'm going to go in there and I'm just going to knock the guy down because he's not expecting me, he doesn't know that I'm coming. I'm going to come with force from the side, I'm just going to bowl the guy over. And Landon Dickerson would do that for sport, and Tyler Booker has done that multiple times in his short Alabama career over the last couple of weeks. And that's a level of violence. That's a level of I'm just going to dominate you out of the play in an instant. That's really that sort of mean-spirited play that and physicality that the coaching staff is seeking. And so watch out for Tyler Booker in that regard. He's going to continue to get more and more reps at the guard spots. For my money, the center position remains unsettled. I'm not mad at Dalcourt in the way I was, you know, at the right tackle last year, but I think that it's still unsettled. I think Seth can come and settle down the position. So I'm still predicting something there. Although I wouldn't be surprised if Emil Ekuor doesn't start to get reps at the center position. And maybe he contributes to some competition at the center. It did seem that Booker played a little more comfortable on the right side versus left, but it's hard to say. But Booker looked comfortable on the field, no doubt. A couple other sort of points I just want to spend a minute with. Jalen Milroe, backup quarterback, leading a 15-play drive, 87 yards, consuming almost 7.5 minutes of the clock, late third, early fourth. He overcame a 3rd and 20, and that is a full team effort. I want to give Milroe credit for that, but that's a full team effort. That's all 11 out there. And when you count the guys sort of rotating in and out, it's closer to 15 or maybe 18. That's a full team effort. When Saban said he wants to see the backups play to a standard, that drive is that standard. And Milroe, he sort of is the face of it as the quarterback. That's the way it works. Again, he overcame a 3rd and 20 with his legs, but he has some nice touch passes. He has some nice reads on a couple of passes. And so I like to see the backups play at that level, play at that standard. And I know the coaching staff is super excited about that as well. The Cameron Latu injury that wasn't, thank goodness, I reserved every right to be just furious that we went for it on a 4th and 12, sort of a useless play, a useless possession, and that was going to cost us Cameron Latu for the season. The way that he went down, he didn't torque or twist his knee. It's just the way it hit the ground and the way he was sort of carried off, not putting any weight. I was convinced that he was done. And like I said, I reserved all right to just be absolutely enraged over that. And then a couple of plays later, when Alabama got the ball back, Latu was back on the field. And so I was so happy to see that. I understand the mentality of 4th and 12, not 4th and 12 just in general. You always punt that away or kick the field goal. But when it's 4th and 12 at the Vanderbilt 36, you start to look at a 53-yard punt, maybe you have to, or field goal attempt, maybe you have to move it back a little further to, you know, to account for the trajectory that you need on a kick that long. And so you say, do we go for it? And maybe we'll get a rep in a game rep at this distance from a kick perspective, or do we go for it and see what we have offensively? And the way things were clicking, you get a touchdown there and you come closer to putting the game away. You know, I can argue both sides of that. I felt at that point Alabama was just playing with house money, and I think the coaches felt the same way. They knew their defense, what it had been doing, what it was capable of. And so I think that was sort of a house money play. But it was going to be infuriating that it was a house money sort of coin toss play that you lose someone like Cameron. And like I said, fortunately, he came back in and was good. I don't know what the right decision there was. It was almost a big play. It was almost a touchdown. And then certainly it would have been nice to see. It would have been nice to see a long kick, to see our guy make a long kick, or Reichert make a long kick there. So a little bit I'm playing the result. Latu wasn't hurt. He almost was and then wasn't. But at any rate, I'm sure there's a lot of different opinions on there, and this is a topic or a situation where I certainly entertain both sides of that discussion. We're going to go to Mini Game Ball on offense, and we're giving Mini Game Ball to Isaiah Bond, another freshman who's easing his way into the lineup, easing his way into play more and more. All the reports are that he's a very natural route runner, and so a guy that can carve out a niche, can carve out an opportunity. And it appears that he is doing that on the aforementioned 15 play, 87 yard, 7.5 minute scoring drive. Isaiah had a critical third down conversion and catching the ball over the middle and slicing through a couple defenders for a 5 yard gain when four was needed was very impressive. And then he had a nice no catch at another point in the game. It looked like maybe the ball was tipped and he ran as if to catch the ball, but he was just really sort of protecting the ball so that no one else would catch it, wouldn't be intercepted or anything. And so he's really playing more defense there. And he let the ball hit the ground. It cost him a reception, but Alabama would have lost yards on the play. So what he made was a smart football play there. And it's nice to see any player do that. Certainly a true freshman who sometimes might get caught up and I don't get the ball very much. So I'm going to get this one, damn it, and try to make a play and show what I can do and yada, yada, yada. And he said, I'm just going to play smart football here. No one's going to catch this ball. We're going to let it drop and we're going to live to fight another down. There's a football sort of acumen, that intelligence, if you will, that he demonstrated there. And so hats off, mini game ball, Isaiah Bond. All right, let's flip the field of defense like we do. You know, it wasn't a shutout. Alabama allowed 3 points, but I'm going to spin that. I'm going to tell you I think that was a good thing. And let's walk through and see how I sort of connect those dots. 129 total yards of offense allowed. Alabama put up, where'd I put that stat? 628 yards of offense. So it was a 499-yard differential between offense, Alabama's offensive production, and the defensive yards allowed, a 499-yard differential, which is best for top five all-time Alabama football. So that's pretty damn impressive. It doesn't matter who you play. Again, we can say Vanderbilt, but how many times have we played Vanderbilt over that time span? How many times have we played games or teams not as good as Vanderbilt over that time span? And for that to be fifth all-time, the scale is such that you can't pin that on an individual opponent. So I thought that was impressive. 129 total yards allowed, like we said, 115 passing and 14 rushing. And that 14 rushing was on 26 carries. I know that accounts for sacks and quarterback sacks, but it always does. It never doesn't. And so 14 yards net rushing on the game is pretty damn impressive. Vanderbilt had 9 first downs. That's a small number in today's game. And Vanderbilt was 1 of 13 on third down conversions, and they were 0 for 1 on fourth down conversions. Like I said, Vanderbilt did score 3 points, and the irony is not lost on me that those points were scored by a former Alabama kicker. Vanderbilt scored. Here's where I'm going to say, I'd rather have a shutout, okay? So I'm not arguing that. But here's the positive that I'm going to take from this. Those 3 points came Vanderbilt's second possession of the game, second or third possession. It was very, very early in the game when they were playing to their script and they were playing to their prep. This is what they had put in to create an opportunity for themselves to be successful. And so those 3 points came on at the end of an 11-play drive where they produced 52 yards of offense, which, by the way, was 40% of their total offense. So when they were running plays from a script with intentionality, these are the opportunities that we see to have success against Alabama. On that single drive, they put up 40% of their total offensive production, all of their points. And then I think that inspired, and I use sort of air quotes, playing from that confidence, hey, we might have something that could maybe not win the game, but keep us in it. That inspired the next possession for Vanderbilt to go for it on 4th and 1, where Will Anderson had a big sack of A.J. Swan and prevented that. But from that point forward, here's the positive, right? Alabama just didn't dominate them from the beginning, which sounds like a negative. Vanderbilt had a plan, executed that plan, had some success at that plan, and never could replicate that. And so the Alabama defense made an adjustment, and Vanderbilt was dead in the water, no pun intended, at that point in time. So to me, that's impressive. There's something to that. It's not that they had a bad plan. They had a good plan, And when Alabama adjusted to it, no dice. There was no more of an opportunity. So I take that as a positive. Again, call it spin, whatever, but I certainly view that as a positive. We mentioned Will Anderson. He had 2.5 sacks on the day. He had an incredible day. He was back to the Will Anderson, I would say, of last year, and I want to be careful because he's had some good games this season. But we spent a lot of times last year talking about his contribution being bigger than his stats. And I thought today was such a day where his contribution was bigger than his stats, even though he had 2.5 sacks. Henry Toa, his contribution was bigger than his stats. And I thought it was interesting that this came on the week after DJ Dale calling Henry Toa just a genius in the defense, in the linebacker position, calling out adjustments, calling out plays as the team is running them. Henry Toa was making plays all over the field. We saw him in coverage. We saw him crashing the line of scrimmage. We saw him attacking the running game. The fact that he only had 6 tackles for as many screens as now I watch the game on TV. And so one thing I look for is how many times they do the different camera angles and replays and such. How many times do you see the same guys in the screen? And it's sort of an unofficial, not metric, but just unofficial guide. And the more you see a guy, especially on defense, in the screen from whatever the angle, then because the camera's following the ball. And so the more angles or the more times you see the same guys on the different TV angles, then that tells you they're being very active. It's sort of an indicator, if you will, that they're being very active. And so for as active as Toa was all over the field, and they had six tackles, 1 tackle for loss. To me, those are low numbers relative to his contribution. He had a good play in coverage. He had a play that I remember. He was man-to-man with the running back, and so the running back stepped up as if to like a fake run, and Toa was there to meet him in the box. The running back split out, running sort of a wheel route, so it was a fake handoff to get the running back running a route, and Toa was right there with him, stride for stride. And so that was a nice play where he was handling his responsibilities, sort of a little bit of read react and playing to his responsibilities. So again, very pleased with this play. Deontay Lawson, who's platooning, I'm using that word officially, with Jalen Moody. He also had 6 tackles, or participated in 6 tackles, and so that was sort of the high water mark for Alabama on Saturday. So he is certainly it's another situation with Moody where for those inside linebacker spots where we have 3 legit players for 2 positions, just like we talk about the guards on offense. I think we have 3 legit players competing for 2 positions. So what does that mean? It means we have competition. It means we have a lot of quality. It means we have some backup if someone goes down. We're not rooting for that, certainly. But you'd rather have 3 competing for 2 rather than 2 competing for 3, right? It's just math. But we like to see Deontay Lawson continue to develop, and he's going to own the position come next spring, and that's exciting to see, too. We know a little bit of what we'll have there. Terrion Arnold seems to further entrench himself at a quarterback position, our cornerback position. Talk about, you know, 3 guys playing for 2 positions. We've got 4 cornerbacks playing for 2 positions, and Terrion seems to be edging out the competition. He did give up a back shoulder throw against Vanderbilt's leading receiver, one of the leading receivers in the conference, so no shame there. He's a taller receiver, but overall, Terrion had a really good day, and we like seeing him. And he wasn't the only cornerback that gave up a little bit of a throw. So we're certainly not mad at that. But Arnold having a tremendous performance and really carving out a role for himself. So that's fun to see. Defensive front, defensive line, there's so many names. And we'll run through a couple of them just real quickly. But the defensive front, the defensive line as a whole is just playing lights out. Really, really impressive. Again, the scheme says that they're not going to rack up a bunch of tackles, but they're filling gaps. They're getting after the quarterback. They're affecting the quarterback. They're limiting the success of the offense. And they are getting better and better as the season progresses, and that's certainly what we would hope. True freshman Jaheim Otis is just a beast. He had a just incredible run stuff on a third down, fought off two defenders, just sort of gap awareness, and then he stepped over to stuff the runner for no gain on what was a third and short play. Tim Smith is just lighting it up, just a real physical participant on the inside. I love the play where, no, I'm not a big fan of penalties, but when he jumped off sides, and the announcer was right, he thought he had a key on the snap count, and it was a false key or you know, whatever. But and so he burst across the line of scrimmage, off sides, knocked the center down, and he just jogged to the sideline. He knew that I'm going to be out this play. So I thought that was kind of funny. But Tim Smith is number 50. Is always a contributor, always bursting through the line of scrimmage, always giving linemen fits. So that's certainly fun to see. DJ Dale had I call it a deer in the headlight sack, just like looked like the Red Sea parted, and DJ Dale ran, was able to burst through the line of scrimmage, make a play on the quarterback. It looked like the quarterback just like froze, again, sort of deer in the headlights, saw this 320-pound guy coming, so surely he's not unblocked, and I should be able to maneuver away from him, and now all of a sudden I've been sacked. And so I thought that was interesting. And I'm going to stick with the theme of the defensive line, but I'm going to extend a mini game ball to Justin Aboibe. This might be his second one of the season. I don't know. But Justin, again, we talked about stat lines for offense, for the defense, Alabama defensive line. You know, don't expect sort of grandeur there. But Justin had three tackles, half a tackle for a loss. He had a one quarterback hurry. And just and he's had almost every game, he's had a play where, you know, he tackles someone behind the line of scrimmage. He's stuffing a run. He doesn't have 15 of them, but he's had one every game. And you see him sort of celebrate. And it just kind of dawned on me, you know, Justin Aboibe is a guy that a lot of fans don't know his name. A lot of he's 92. A lot of fans don't know a lot about him. Couldn't pick him out of a lineup necessarily. But he makes a play, at least one, every single game. And it dawned on me that, you know, this guy's going to have an eight-year NFL career. And you think, like, who's going to draft Justin Aboibe? Well, NFL scouts are, because they're going to look at him and they're going to say, he's a three-year starter at Alabama. And he never sort of was a highlight reel guy. He was never sort of the bell cow of the defensive line. But damn it, he started for Nick Saban defensive front 3 years. And never didn't contribute. He had a year with injury, but when he would come in and play, he would play well and he would make plays and certainly play to his role in the defense, which is equally as important. And I think over the next couple of weeks, Byron Young had an ankle sprain, looks like a low ankle sprain. So that's what the reports are saying. So not a high ankle sprain. Which can take you out longer, and we do sort of the tightrope procedure on that. This looks more like I'm going to call it a run-of-the-mill sort of ankle sprain. He was carted off, which always looks worse, but then he was back on the sideline at one point with sort of crutches, which looked more like, you know, signaling, but he was wearing flip-flops and no walking boot, and a little bit later he had a walking boot, but still wearing flip-flops. And so I've never seen someone on crutches with flip-flops right after an injury with no tape or no boot or no nothing. And so it looks like Byron Young's going to be back. Will he play next week against Arkansas? I don't know. Will he be limited potentially? And so where I'm going with this is we're glad Byron's going to be okay and that he's going to be back and he's going to contribute before the season. And he's someone that we thought really had an opportunity for interior pass rush and such. But the point is Justin Aboibe is going to get probably most of those Byron Young snaps, and he will contribute. And so here are the next couple of weeks, people are going to say, Justin Aboibe, who's this guy? And that's sort of a little bit of a prediction there, but we're going to have hats off to Aboibe for his performance against Vanderbilt. All right, let's look at special teams. You know, it's almost, hey guys, nothing to see here. There was no super flashy like there was against La Monroe. A couple of gaffes, but it sort of balanced out and it didn't really cost the Tide. And so I'm not going to get too worked up about it. Will Reichert was 2 of 2 on his kicks. He had a long of 40 and then he hit 7 PATs. You know, again, we talked about
the long play on 4th and 12 from the Vanderbilt 36. Should the Tide have attempted a field goal there? Again, we can argue both sides of that. It'd be neat for to look at this and say Rocket was 3 of 3 with a long of 54. That'd be cool. The coach has made a different decision, and we're just glad Latu's not hurt. Burnup had, I would say, a decent day. His average day is better than his average day last year. I'll say that. And so he's kicking in a range, in a realm that we can be satisfied with. It's not outstanding, but it's satisfactory, and it's getting the job done. So he had 2 for 87. He averaged 43.5, had a long of 47. So that means he was sub 40 on one, but a long of 47. That's nice. Kool-Aid McKinstry. Now, the punt return is where we had a couple of gaffes, but not altogether terrible. Kool-Aid McKinstry had 5 punt returns for 91. We were high on his stock as a punt returner. He had an average of 18. That includes a long of 40, where he was really setting up the wall, and then the punter got him. And Kool-Aid actually fumbled the ball, and so and it would lost the fumble. It was a 40-yard return on a it was a 40-yard return on a 48-yard punt, and so Vanderbilt gained 8 yards on the punt, if you will. So it's frustrating. You don't want to see a punt return. Saban emphasized last week, what about the punt game? And he said, possess the ball. That's the key. You got to possess the ball. Now we want to gain yards on top of that, but possess the ball. And so what do we do right after an outstanding punt return game? We fumble the ball and lose it. So that's certainly frustrating. And then subsequent to that, we fumble. Brian Branch is in. He fumbles. And Malachi Moore, fortunately, is there to recover. So Alabama still possesses the ball, but there's a couple of fumbles there. So I don't know if the guys are reading their press. Punt returners. As punt returners after the big day against La Monroe, but certainly an opportunity to clean some stuff up there. Those are the kinds of plays that can cost you a game. We jokingly say Vanderbilt gained 8 yards on the punt, and there's that sort of extended possession. They punted again 4 plays later, and so it was sort of all for naught. But reality is you give a team that second possession, that extra possession, you give them that mulligan. Boy, we've seen that over the years. It's on the mulligan where they score. We talk about the Texas game where a penalty on third down gives Texas a first down, and Texas goes on to score. And so what we need to do is clean that up. It's sloppy. We don't need it. It didn't hurt us, but it's a learning opportunity. And so that's where we need to focus attention there. All right. So what's next up for Alabama? You know, some will say, and I will agree, that we're getting into the meat of the schedule. We've got a couple of serious games over this next stretch, starting off with Arkansas in Fayetteville. And so, and I think that's officially how you have to say it. It's not Fayetteville, it's Fayetteville. So I think you have to, I think that's sort of the registered pronunciation for Arkansas Fayetteville. So nonetheless, Alabama travels to Arkansas next week. And I'm going to tell you, it's a very disappointing loss for Hog fans. It has to be the way that they lost in Dallas to Texas A&M. And so they may have sort of a tough sort of bounce back. I give Sam Pittman a lot of credit. I think they're going to be ready to play, and he's going to have them ready to play. KJ Jefferson, I think, is a very talented quarterback and really gave Alabama more than we wanted last year in Tuscaloosa. And so to have them in Arkansas, I think, is going to be a tough measure. Now, the Hog defense has been a little porous there. They are averaging, allowing 26 points. I'd say Alabama's going to be better than average. And they are averaging 401 yards on defense. And again, I think Alabama is going to be has the opportunity to be better than average given the other opponents that the Hogs have faced. Take nothing away from Drew Sanders, Alabama transfer, who is absolutely lighting it up for Arkansas. I wish he was still playing with the Tide. Of the guys that sort of transferred in and transferred out, you always want to win the transfer portal, if you will. And on the whole, I think Alabama did and has. But if there's that one that got away that you wish that hadn't, it'd certainly be Drew Sanders out of last year's class. I'm predicting, and I'm sort of kind of looking at averages. I'm also looking at the strength of the Alabama defense. I'm predicting that Alabama is going to score more than what Arkansas is allowing. And I think Alabama defense is going to hold Arkansas to about half of what they're scoring. And so I net out probably a generous Alabama score, but I net out with a 42-17 sort of prediction. I reserve the right to tighten that up as we get closer to the game, because I appreciate the process that I used to come up with 42-17, but it feels like a bigger margin. And so if you said it was 35-17, something in that range, that probably, as we get into Saturday, I might tighten it up in that regard. All right. At any rate, appreciate you listening. We really, really do. If I ticked anyone off earlier with my commentary on the offensive play calling, man, I mean, I'm not here to do that necessarily, but let's talk about it. Let's engage, man. Join us on a Zoom call and just light me up. Let's do it. Drop me an email, send me a Facebook or whatever. I'm here for that. It's all about engaging, sharing different opinions. And it's boring if we all have the same opinion. So I have mine, and I'm happy to discuss yours. So that'd be great. Look forward to that. Getting on the Zoom call is super silly easy. Just go to AlabamaFootballPodcast.com and just join our support group, and you can do it for $2. So for $2, you can join next week's Zoom call and light me up in front of an audience. That'd be great. I would love that. And if you enjoy that experience and want to come back and do it week after week, then you know what? That's cool too. So at any rate, if you enjoy just listening, then we certainly appreciate that. And if there's one ask, it's go to your download machine and leave us a review. We like the 5 stars so people can find us, but leave us an authentic review. And we certainly appreciate every one of those. I need to get back in the habit of reading some of those. There was a really nice review after our first, I think it was the, whatever it was, our preseason shows. Someone had commented that glad to see us back and left us a review. So we certainly appreciate that and welcome your reviews as well. All right, enough of that. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at AlabamaFootballPodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.